RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today I am joined by another podcaster, a friend of mine, Dan Matthews of the Nomadic Outdoorsman, and we are going to be talking about Christmas gift ideas for the serious hunter. We cover boots, we cover optics, we cover weapons, we cover hunting apps, a subscription to a hunting app, things like that. It's a really good conversation about gifts maybe that you can tell your wife that you want, or your parents that you want, or if you have, you're kind of blanking out on what to buy your brother or your dad or another hunter in your life, this is the episode that you need to listen to. I would consider myself a serious hunter. I know Dan, he's not only a serious hunter, but he's a multi-species hunter as well. And so he hunts everything from the whitetails in the Midwest all the way up to the high country, elk and mule deer. So listen to what he has to say. Listen to what I have to say. Put it in your brain, rattle it around, and then, I don't know, go buy something. So that's what today's episode is about. Christmas is right around the corner. Right. And so we're all looking for these gift ideas. I'm going to mention two gift ideas right now that we did not cover in this episode. And one of them is a partner of this podcast, and that is Code Blue. okay? Code Blue Sense. You can go to codebluesense.com and check out all of their products, including their real and synthetic deer urines. You can check out their, man, what is it? Their scent elimination products, right? Whether you are the kind of person who likes sprays or clothing clothing detergents, laundry detergents, body washes and soaps, and other scent elimination sprays, other scent elimination products like that. But if I could put one product in every stocking, every serious hunter stocking, it would be the Rope-A-Dope system from Code Blue Scents. Okay. It's a preorbital gland scent that you smear on a blue rope, hang it in the woods. And what does that do? The deer come to investigate it, right? It's almost like a mock licking branch. And what they smell that, they will come to that. They will investigate it. They may not lay a scrape underneath of it, but the smell makes them curious. And therefore, they come in. And what do you have right in front of that? You have a trail camera. And that trail camera can take a picture, and you're just collecting inventory of every single deer that is running that woodlot, that field edge, whatever the case may be. So go check out codebluesense.com. Enter the discount code NFC20 for 20% off. The next one that I want everybody to go check out is my brand new company, FullSneakGear.com. And FullSneakGear.com is right now, it's an apparel company, clothing company. It's basically t-shirts for serious deer hunters, man. We have 6 t-shirts available right now. Actually, probably 7 by the time this comes out. And then we got a crew neck sweatshirt coming out. We have 2 sets of stocking caps. We have the official Nine Finger Chronicles black hat. I call it the date night hat. And so go to FullSneakGear.com, check it out. And that's it, man. That's what I wanted to say. That's what we talk about in today's episode. So go check out the partners of this podcast. Go check out all the brands that we talk to, and put down a serious hunter's Christmas list of your own. Hand it to your wife and say, I expect every one of these products, including the e-bike that we discussed, under the tree this Christmas. So I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't recommend that. Anyway, good vibes in, good vibes out, and I will talk to you next week, man. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Hunting Gear podcast episode. And today I am joined by the nomadic outdoorsman himself, Mr. Dan Matthews. Dan, what's up, man?
Dude, not a lot. It's cold outside today. I'm hoping to get out and kill something soon. It's been a rough year so far, but it's just like bluebird weather all the time down here. No rut activity. I literally didn't have a buck chasing on camera a single time this year.
Wow. That blows my mind, man. And the thing about it is, I heard the same thing from hundreds of people. Now, I don't know what that means, because hunters are usually like pretty pessimistic when it comes to what they're seeing, right? So the rut sucks, or this sucks, you know what I mean? But I keep hearing people say that. My stepdad, he hunts first season shotgun here in Iowa, and he has said that this has been the worst season. He's usually tagged out by now. Him and his sons and his daughter-in-law, they're usually tagged out. But this year, he says, I haven't even had a deer within shooting range yet. And so some of that, we believe, is EHD. Some of it is maybe low. Not, I don't know. It's just an absolute crazy rut, crazy leading into the shotgun season. I'm personally hoping for about 2 feet of snow within the next within the next couple of weeks. But other than that, man, how has your season been overall?
It's been... Man, it's been a weird season. A lot of flukes, a lot of hiccups. My first buck that I shot at, my arrow, like my nock and my arrow detached as soon as it left my bow.
Yeah.
My arrow went one way. My knock went the other way.
Oh, man.
No, still no idea what happened. Went up to Wisconsin, shot a big buck on a public island, floated in my canoe. That up there, man, I saw a ton of rut activity. This was October 9th. I had bucks like death fighting each other.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe it. But anyways, arrowed a buck up there, brought in a tracking dog, bumped it multiple times. I mean, I only had a limited amount of time up there, spent 4 days looking for it, and went back up during rifle season, opening day. I was like, if I don't shoot this buck, somebody's going to shoot it, and I'd like to at least lay hands on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 5 minutes into the hunt, shot a different buck, great buck, went out in the cattails, died. I went and recovered it, heard two other shots, and then heard hunters talking, went over there, and they ended up killing that buck I shot with my bow.
Oh, my God. How big was he? Was he a stud?
He was a stud. He was a chocolate rack 10. I mean, like, he wasn't just a monster. I would say 140, 145-inch deer. I got video of my shot on him, and, I mean, I've watched that video 100 times since. Just didn't get penetration. And after seeing what happened, he was at 40. I set my pins for 36, knowing that he would duck. He ducked. His elbow came up and covered his vitals. Went through the arm. So, like, you know when they load up?
They load,
to spring away? Yeah, he loaded up. And I just didn't account for that. I didn't account for anything covering. I mean, it hit the pocket right where I wanted it to.
But his joint...
His joint came up.
Oh, my God.
And it went into that. And as he bounded away, I could see full movement of the arrow. I mean, it was going down to the ground, up 5 feet in the air. So I knew there was no penetration. And then I got to actually look at the injury once I went and talked to those hunters. It did. It went through the arm and poked into the rib cage, but not into the chest cavity. Like, it broke skin and fat and muscle, and that was it.
Man, that's tough, man. I've been there. Hey, I was there this year with you.
Yeah.
Fortunate enough, I actually just got trail camera pictures this morning of that buck that I shot. So he's still alive. I'm hoping the shotgun hunters don't get to him, and I'm hoping that I can go out this late season muzzleloader and go after him. But I got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
So this was just pure circumstance that it, you know, he loaded, you did everything right. He loaded, the elbow came up, kind of blocked the vitals. What broadhead were you using?
I was using a Rage hypodermic.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Now here's the other question, the follow-up question, and it's not against Rage or anything. Do you feel like if you were shooting a fixed blade, we'd be having a different conversation right now?
We could be. I think it's more, I don't think it was like a punch through issue as much as it was watching it back. It just looked like he loaded up, and I think it was almost a pinch of the arrow. Like, as the arrow was coming in, his whole arm came up and also pinched it and almost
slowed
like
it down.
The leverage of it just like completely slowed it down.
I got you.
Because only one side of my broadhead, only one blade of my broadhead was bent or chipped or anything. I mean, like, it was just a little bit tweaked, if you know what I mean, like when I found it. And so it didn't even fully catch bone. And so I'm like, there's no reason it shouldn't have gone all the way through.
Right.
Other than looking back at the video, I think what happened is it started to enter and his arm came up and it just completely pinched it and didn't allow it to go any farther.
Okay. All right.
So,
well,
I'm not switching, if that answers it.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep using them. I've never had an issue with them. I smoked a coyote from my Missouri stand. I haven't shot anything Missouri with my bow this year, aside from a coyote. And it's just been a wild year, man. Yeah. I had high hopes, and I still do. I'm gonna get out there and try to knock something down here.
Yeah. Hey, man, there's still plenty of time. When does Missouri's season end?
I think it's January 15th.
Okay, so you got some time yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I know you. You're a bit of a gear nut. Kind of the same as me. I like to tinker. I like to try new products. I like to, at the same time, though, like you said, with your broadhead, you're not going to change. because you like them, you're confident in them.
Yep.
Same with certain products for me. And Christmas is right around the corner, and I want to talk about a handful of different products that we would recommend to listeners, or maybe if we had unlimited funds, we could buy these for every listener out there and give them a special surprise. Let's start that conversation. I'm going to pass the ball to you, and I want you to go ahead and talk about the first product that you would recommend for as a Christmas gift for not a part-time hunter, but a serious hunter.
So I'm going with a good pair of binos.
Yeah.
Like, that is number one. I feel like if you don't have a good set of optics, you might as well not be out there. I've been in the stand, I've been on the mountain plenty of times where I've seen things, and it's like I used to have the cheap, you know, Tasco Walmart purchased binos. I grew up using those. Yep. And in Wisconsin, I could get away with it, you know, 70 yards away. But now that I hunt bigger country, anything farther out, even for just scouting, for looking at waterfowl, for looking at turkeys, you just have to have good binos no matter what you're doing. And yep. So right out of the gate, that's what I would say. I personally use the Fury range-finding binos, the Fury 5000s from Vortex. Absolutely love them. It eliminates me having to carry around a range-finder as well. It's all in one. So I've been using those, man, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And if I could get everybody a pair of range-finding binos, I 100% would.
Dude, that's awesome. I know Vortex. I know that they're an awesome brand. Because I had binos on my list as well. But how much is a pair of range finding binoculars?
I think they're around $1,200.
Okay.
I think that's right. And I'd have to do some research. It's been a while since I bought them.
And do you remember what the magnification is on those?
Yeah, it's 10 power.
10 by 42.
I think all of their... Yep, 10 by 42, and I think all of their range-finding binos are that, because they actually came out with another set, which I almost got. It's got ballistic compensation built into it, so if you're rifle hunting, you can load all of your data into your binos.
Oh, wow.
And then when you range, it tells you what to adjust your scope to. But I actually have custom turrets on my scope, so I don't actually need that feature.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, you know, I'm not going to switch.
Yeah.
Just to say that I have it.
That's badass, man. That's badass. I'm going to take it a different direction with binos. And so Vortex, again, same company. They're just an amazing company to work with. The reason I say that is because they're participants in whatever activity, right? So you can call up Vortex and say, hey, I'm going on an elk hunt. I'm going on a deer hunt. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And you can talk with someone who has done those things, and they can make the best suggestion. At the same time, I think Vortex might be one of the number one binoculars for bird watchers in the United States.
Oh,
yeah.
And so, I never thought about that.
Yeah. And so people who love watching birds and other wildlife, they have people there that they can talk to. Okay. So customer service out of the way. My recommendation was going to be, if you're a serious hunter and you have kids, then you want to get your kids as involved as possible in hunting so that they can come with you, right? I know you got kids. At some point, you're going to want them to participate. I got kids. My daughter's already stepping in to it. And Vortex has just come out with a pair of binoculars basically fitted for kids. It's a starter binocular, basically same high quality, same VIP warranty with Vortex, but it's smaller. It's like I think it's $99, and so it's at the opposite spectrum of price, and it would just be a product that a kid with the durability of Vortex that they can use, like, man, for several years until they decide to bump up.
Yeah, so those exact binoculars, I got a pair for each of my kids.
Yes.
And What's funny is I could probably walk through the house and find lens caps in every room, you know, the harness in every room. They wear them around like it's a purse. Yeah. I mean, they just, everywhere we go, if I say we're going on a drive, they want to have them. They bring them on all the road trips, and they've only had them for about a month. But it's funny because when you do buy kids equipment, they want to use it.
Right.
You know, it's one thing to look at the light switch down the hallway, but it's a totally different thing when you actually get them looking at an animal through them.
Right.
So,
and one of our, I don't know if it's our whole family's thing, favorite thing to do, but one of my favorite things to do is August timeframe, deer in velvet, they're in the beans, and we drive around, and now all the kids aren't fighting over mine. They all have their own. And so I'm really looking forward to doing that with my daughter, especially, and she has, I got her those. And so, I don't know, man. That's a great product for adults and kids. And for a serious hunter, to elaborate on what you said, especially if you're spreading your wings and you're going into different hunting scenarios outside. Let's say I was born and raised a deer hunter, all right?
Yep.
Outside of that, it's great to have a very high-quality pair of optics for Western hunts, elk, you know, it all transitions. So I would say that it's like binoculars are, personally, it'd probably be my number two product that I would highly recommend spending money on, and or just having a really high quality pair.
Yeah. I heard it years ago, like the quality of your optics can directly translate to how successful you are on a hunt. Yeah. I mean, I've looked through other people's binos before, and I'm like, dude, there could be a deer standing in the wide open and I wouldn't be able to see it.
Right.
Versus me, like, I'm comfortable with my binos. I've got them focused for my eyes. You know, I focus my right eye, left eye, make sure everything's perfectly dialed in. And I do that at the start of every hunt, whether I just climbed up in a tree, whether I just got out west. If I glass a new spot, you know, I'm making sure I'm focused wherever. I've seen field mice running on the side of a mountain. Across the valley. Yeah. I've caught elk at 1,100 yards because I saw a leg move under a cedar tree.
Yep.
And you can't do that unless you have good optics.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, obviously go with the price range that you can afford, but Vortex, I haven't used a single pair that I haven't liked so far.
Right. Yep. That was kind of a shout out to Vortex. We were hyping.
It was. Yeah,
we were hyping them up.
I feel like I sing their praises all the time because it is good for entry level, for every level. And I can't say anything negative about the other big optics companies because I just haven't, like, I haven't used them, you know?
Yeah. I've had a couple in the past. I've had some Nikons in the past. I've had a pair of Leupolds in the past, and they're okay. Don't get me wrong. It's not like they're dog shit, but I know a ton of people from Vortex. I'd rather use their products on just about, you know, on anything than, you know, and full disclosure, they're partners with the Nine Finger Chronicle side of things. So, you know, I've got a relationship with them. So, all right. Binos. I don't need to talk about that anymore because you brought it up. What's your next product that you would recommend?
So for me, it's a hunting knife.
Yeah, dude.
Like the same thing. It's all trial and error. And I've discovered, like, Havilon, that tiny little pocket knife, you can do literally everything with. Last year, I think in two blades, I helped quarter and on some of them debone 5 elk.
With two blades?
With two blades.
Dang.
Two blades. And, I mean, two of them were on the same day. Actually, two different times it was on the same day.
Yeah.
But I'm like, you can't beat them on the mountain. It weighs nothing.
Right.
It's smaller than most pocket knives. And you have the razor edge. You can, you know, doing deer in Wisconsin, doing elk out there, doing squirrels, rabbits, turkey, you name it. I haven't found a better knife. And I know there's a lot of replaceable knife or replaceable blade knife companies, but Havilon's the one that I started with. And same thing. I won't switch from it. I do everything with it.
Yeah. Hey, that's great, dude. I am a huge fan of that as well. I am, God, what do I use? I use, what's the other brand? Outdoor Edge.
Yep, dude, Outdoor Edge.
I have one of their kits where it's got the replaceable blade in it, the replaceable blade portion of the knife. It has a miniature bone saw built into it. And
no way.
Yeah, and a gut hook in it. So it's, so you know, you can rip all the way up to this, however far you want on the guts. Or if you want, if you're backcountry hunting, let's say you shoot a mule deer, you can cape, you can do that gutless method where you can cape them all the way from their yep. tail to the base of the antlers and pull them apart that way and still save the cape. And that gut hook is just butter up there, cutting high.
I need to check that out. I didn't know any of the companies made that. Yeah. I'm not like sold, like Havilon's just what I started with. It's,
right.
I've had no reason to switch. When I went to Wisconsin for Thanksgiving, my mom's husband, he had like a fillet knife.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a full on, I don't know how long the blade was, but it was a Havilon product. And I was like, no way.
Yeah.
And apparently all these companies are making extra blades that you can purchase. But that's the one thing I've always wanted on that knife is like a bone saw so that I could cut through the yeah. pelvis of a deer and not have to do like the, you know, circle the butt with the blade method yep. and pull everything out.
Yep. That's what I do, man. I cut the pelvis, break it apart, and then I bring the guts down, and then I, it's gross, but I use my finger through that, I guess you would call it the anal cavity, and just rip yep. all that right out. If it's a, like my buck, it's sometimes it's hard that, cause that bone saw is only 3 or 4 inches long.
Okay.
And so sometimes it's hard to get it started. So usually this year I pull out my tree saw. It's a Wicked Tree Gear saw, and it's a big blade. I mean, it's for cutting wood, but it cuts yeah. through bone just as easy. And that's what I used this year when I was gutting my buck.
Dang. Yeah. Yeah. I typically do have a tree saw with me. I got to start thinking more about that.
Yep.
I mean, I've just got to the point now where on deer, I'm so used to just kind of doing the whole, like, outline the anal cavity with the knife.
Yep.
And then just pull everything through that way. I've never really used the butt out tool.
Neither have I.
I know people swear by it, but I'm the kind of guy, if I find something that I like, I just stick with it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with food. My wife and I go to the same two restaurants in town every single day and night.
Same here. Same here.
Yeah.
And they're like, same thing, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. The usual.
The usual. Yep.
It's bad when people know you by name.
Exactly. All right. So a good hunting knife. I agree 100%. What's one of the next products that you want to chat about?
Boots.
Yep.
Boots are, I think, right up there with optics. If you don't have good boots, I mean, listen, you can get away with it if you're going to your back 40, climbing a stand, not going very far. But if it's somebody who likes to get out and try new things, even rabbit and squirrel hunting, like you're putting miles on
yeah.
if you're doing it.
Yep.
And if you don't have good footwear, you're screwed.
Yeah.
I take this back. One time, I ruined a hunt because of bad footwear. My mom was like, hey, I've got this pair of, I don't even remember, maybe Rocky boots or something like that.
Probably a steel-toed boot or some work boot yeah. or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was just colder than I was expecting. I can't remember what happened to my boots, but I take hers out there. She's like, oh, these are really good boots. She's like, I've just had them in the garage for forever. They haven't been used, whatever. And so I go and I put them on. I'm like, oh, dang, these actually fit pretty well. I'm hunting 10 acres into a 40 acre chunk up in Wisconsin, and I sit down and I look down, and the entire insulated portion of my foot, like the toes, are sticking out of the front of the boot. I mean, it's split at the sole and the leather, and I'm like, what the heck? And it's funny because I didn't even feel it. My ankles were tightened so much
yeah.
and I only had a short walk, but I sat down. Then I look at the other boot and I literally, like, 1 pound of pressure peeled the whole thing apart.
Yeah.
And I ended up going and buying brand new boots that day
yeah.
at Scheels. So,
yeah, dude, that's my number one. That is my number one yeah. product for any serious hunter is pair of boots. Okay, so I just bought a pair of Crispy Colorados in August. I want to say August or July this year. I wore them hiking to break them in. You know, I wore them while I was mowing the yard to break them in. I was shooting my bow, break them in. But my previous pair of Crispies lasted me, I want to say, 5 total seasons, man. That's dang. And all the boots that I've had before that. So before that, I had another pair of Crispies. But before that, I had a pair of, are they Danner Pronghorns? I think they're...
Danner Pronghorns.
Danner Pronghorns. I had those for 2 seasons, but then after the second season, they started to fall apart. And yep. I will admit that I am really hard and tough on my equipment. Like, if I need something moved, I'll kick it, or I'll, you know, drag my foot across it, or, you know, whatever. Bad for the boot.
Yep.
But I never had that problem with any of my Crispies. And so foot care matched with the right sock is very important. And so that's why I put, it's like one is boots, 1B, 1A is boots, 1B is socks. And so that's, boots are number one, man. Got to have a good pair of boots.
Do you do a liner, or do you just go with like your insulated sock or like your wool sock?
Yeah, it really depends on the hunting scenario. So for me, let's say with it being hunting, like, okay, I have an uninsulated boot. I wear a light sock early season. You know, you know your feet aren't going to get cold, right? They may get a little warm depending on your sock if you're going to do long hikes in hot weather. No big deal. Even up until, you know, mid-season, that high of 50 type day, I'm not wearing, you know, or maybe, let me take that back. Low of 30, high of 50 type day where it's not below freezing, I probably won't be wearing too heavy of a sock, too heavy of a boot. But once it gets cold, then I will wear a big thick like a wool or alpaca sock, and so it's more, at that point it's the same boot, it's just a different sock.
I use the same boots for everything. I've got the Kennetrek non-insulated, and I mean it's the same exact scenario. I switch out my socks depending on how cold it is. I don't change out boots.
Yep.
The only time I wear a different boot is if I'm like doing real muddy work, or, you know, I'm duck hunting a flooded field. If I'm not wearing waders, I'm just wearing like lacrosse Alpha Burleys, 1600 gram. Those are my like super cold, super wet, trudging through snow boot.
Yep.
But if I'm actually hunting, if I'm pursuing, instead of like sitting and waiting for animals, I'm using those kind of treks.
Yeah. Yep. That's the same. Now, the only time I'm wearing rubber boots, and I feel like I've beat this to death on any podcast that I talk about gear on, is if I have to cross a creek. Outside of that, I'm not wearing, I'd rather wear boot covers than I would wear, you know, if I'm sitting in a tree stand and it's, you know, below freezing or something like that, then I'm wearing boot covers instead of a big insulated pair of boots.
Yeah, I made the mistake. Man, it would have been 3 seasons ago, I think. When I elk hunt, I mean, we go to spots for rifle season where we're driving 45 minutes to an hour and a half on four-wheelers or side-by-sides every morning.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm completely decked out like I'm snowmobiling.
Yep.
Right? I've got big pants. I've got the thickest and most weatherproof layers on, and I'll wear those lacrosse boots. Mm-hmm. And then when I get there, I just pull my Kennetrek out, take my boots off, put them in the back.
Yep.
One day we got out to the end of this road and I look over and we see elk immediately. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, there's
time
75 elk down in the bottom. So we're all like, hey, let's move down the ridge, get eyes, see if we can find a big bull. And we get down there and all of a sudden I look back and there's 3 bulls that were 50 yards underneath the side by side where we parked it.
Mm-hmm.
They were just hanging out there and they weren't going to move aside from the fact that we walked out on this finger and now they could see us.
Yeah.
They end up working all the way down in the bottom. I shoot one of the bulls at 671, I think it was. We end up going down there and I was just in the zone, didn't think anything of it. And I'm talking like probably 1,000-1,200 foot elevation change down to the bottom of this valley. And we get down there, and I realize that I've got those lacrosse boots on, and I've got to pack an elk out. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Dude, I didn't take them off. I'd almost go barefoot. I mean, Jesus, that would suck.
Oh, dude, I was so annoyed. And I'm sitting there, like, the whole time we're quartering this elk out, I'm just thinking, like, my life is going to really suck. I'm going to tear my feet apart.
Yeah.
And we get a radio call from some of the other hunters. They're like, hey, who got one down? We're up by the side-by-side. I'm like, bring my boots. Go in the tote on the back of my four-wheeler, grab my boots. And they're like, wait, what? What are you wearing? And I'm like, I've got rubber boots that are almost up to my knees. And they're like, oh, man. So they ended up bringing them down. I had to pack those freaking rubber boots out, but it's way better than hiking out in them.
That's, dude, yeah, that would suck, man. All right, boots. Let's say we talk binos, hunting knives, boots. What's the next one?
Okay, so the next thing on my list is a subscription to a mapping software.
That's a perfect.
Don't care what it is. I personally use Onyx. I love it. I've got all my waypoints saved. But a mapping software is like, if you can't be on the ground scouting, glassing, like you can almost, I talked to a guy, Clifton Denny. We hunted this year up in Wisconsin together. He's like, if you show me a public land chunk, I can zero you in within a couple acres probably of where a big buck's going to be.
Yeah.
Just by looking at the map. I'm not that good with it, but I use it a lot just to get access to properties around here. I use it for when I go out west, if I want to find a new spot, if I want to find a good point to glass from. Mm-hmm. You just can't go wrong with using your electronics to scout for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I imagined on some of these places, what would happen if I lost my phone on one of these hunts and I'm back in, you know, because I have to walk 3 miles back on some of these places, or I go 3 miles back. I've been to a scenario where I'm 2 miles back, set up camp, then go another mile and a half in. The one day I was from the camp, I was 2.5 miles back. And so lose your phone in unfamiliar territory. Shit, dude, you've never scouted there. You've never been there before.
Yeah.
You could get lost even in a relatively small piece of public property, you know, hunting. But dude, Onyx is really, really easy to use, man. And it's one of the best for a reason. And I'm a huge fan of it. And I've used Hunt Stand. I've used Onyx. There's another one out there that I've used before.
Go Hunt.
It was a different one. I think it's changed names recently. Anyway, all of them had their own place, but Onyx, I believe, I feel Onyx has the most crossover for a whitetail hunter and a guy who wants to go out west, right? So it's easy for both to use. There's not a ton of other extra stuff that you have to do. When you turn it on, the map pops up. You don't have to choose a map. You don't have to, you know, pick where, you know, what you want to see. It just automatically pops up. You can pick satellite, you can pick hybrid, you can pick no topo, whatever, you know, whatever it is. And man, I feel it works really, really good.
Yeah, I don't have really any experience with the other companies, but I find little things all the time that I didn't know about with Onyx, or like I'll hear somebody talking about it and I'll be like, dude, you can't do that.
Yeah.
The two finger thing, you click your two different fingers on your map,
mm-hmm.
and it will automatically give you the distance between those two
points.
Oh
yeah, that's badass.
I had no idea, and I was like, dude, this is brilliant. Like, I need this all the time. I look at a spot and I'm like, okay, how far across is that? Like, how much do I have to wade through cattails in order to get to my spot? Or, you know, how far is it to actually get back to where these guys have a bull down and I'm going to go and help them?
Yep.
Things like that. Now I didn't use it this year, because it seemed like we were just on the go all the time. But the feature where you can actually click a spot and then see what all you can glass around it.
Oh, yes. That feature
is brilliant, and I can't wait to actually use it.
Yeah, right. So you're saying, well, I saw a deer here yesterday. I don't want to go in there yet because I might spook them. So I need to find a point to where I can glass down in there. And without that technology, you have to be there in order to say, okay, well, shit, I can't because this ridge is blocking it. So I got to go to the opposite side of the valley or a different point to glass down in there. And so, yeah, dude, that's pretty badass. Yeah. Spartan Forge, I believe, has some really, really cool shit too, like LiDAR on theirs now, where you can see just every single crack and crevice in the, like, because satellite imagery can only go so far, topo lines can only go so far, but LiDAR allows you to see cracks and crevices and little benches in between that stuff where these deer like to, especially for mule deer hunting, right? I mean, how often do you see a mule deer just tucked in someplace?
Yep.
And you wouldn't be able to see it, see that feature without that type of technology. And so, Spartan Forge, they're doing some crazy stuff too.
I'll have to check that out. Do you know what company it is? There's a company now that they've partnered with an optics company, and I wish I knew the names of both, but they've got a bino that hooks to your mapping software and or rangefinder, and when you range an object, it drops a pin of where you just ranged onto your mapping software.
That's very intriguing. I have not heard that.
So I heard about this actually, I think it was a year and a half ago at the Western Hunt Expo. I was talking to somebody about it.
Yeah.
And they're like, dude, you got to check these two brands out. And I don't remember. I know it wasn't Vortex for the optic or for the rangefinder, but I don't remember what optic company it is. And I don't remember. It was either Spartan Forge or Go Hunt. I feel like it was one of those two.
Well, I'll have to go check that out. Make a note here. Check that out. Okay.
But I'm like, that's an awesome, I figure, you know, with all of the technology, it seems like a year or two later, every company has that same technology.
Yep.
But to have that, like you shoot a deer and you're like, okay, I just shot a deer with my rifle, a mule deer, a whitetail, whatever, at 130 yards. You range that and it drops a pin. Now you know where to start looking for blood, especially for Western hunting. You get down into some of these places or shed hunting, you know, you glass a shed and you get down there and you're like, okay, it's near this burnt tree. Mm-hmm. Well, now you get down there and there's 15 of them that you didn't see. And you're like, I don't know which one to start looking for or looking near.
Exactly. Man, so that's a great point. Great point. All right. Mapping software. Lots of them to go check out. Do your research. Next product.
Okay. My next product is an adapter. An adapter for your phone, to your binos, to your spotting scope, to whatever.
Okay.
I use the Olin, I think it's pronounced Olin, magnetic adapter. And that just allows me to record everything. Because I would say camera. I love to document stuff. I love to bring action cameras out. I love to have a drone out. I love all of that stuff. But this essentially eliminates a lot of that equipment. I use my phone for everything. I mean, I video through my spotting scope all the time when I'm hunting. Mm-hmm. I video through my binos all the time. If I'm out scouting new areas, or like you said, looking at deer in soybean fields when they're all bachelored up, I can't tell you how many times I've had my binos hooked to my window mount. I've got my phone on them. Now everybody in the car can see the same thing I'm seeing.
Okay, what is the name of the company?
It's Ollin.
Ollin. Cell phone adapter?
Yeah. Yeah, you can just look up cell phone adapter and then... I switched to magnetic. I used to use phone scope.
Yep.
I think my GoPro mount for it busted, like the heat. I don't know what material they make it out of or 3D printed out of, but it just like basically shattered. And then the connection on everything else, I just didn't care for a whole lot. So I heard about this company and I was like, dude, I'm going to give it a go. I switched and I will never go to anything other than magnetic connection.
Okay, you can use it on a spotting scope as well, right?
Yep, spotting scope, binos, and the case for it is thin. I mean, it's just like your normal phone case. I carry it around in my pocket. If I'm out hunting, I literally had my phone in that case my entire elk season this year. Okay. Same thing with whitetail season in Wisconsin.
Okay. I'm right there. I've been looking for this. I can't believe I haven't found it before, and I'm going to buy one probably as soon as we get off of the phone today.
Nice.
Yeah.
We did it. I can't tell you. So we got on a bear in Colorado this year, and a second group of our guys, they were at a spike camp down this ridge line a couple miles in. They were packing out two bulls, and they came up to the road where we were glassing this bear. Everyone's trying to find this bear. I mean, binos are out in every hunter's hands, and two other people could find it. They came over to me with my spotter, with my phone. I zoomed out on my phone. That's the other thing. You get extra magnification. I mean, I could see this bear blinking from 1,100 yards.
Yeah.
Like, it's unbelievable when you have 60 power on your spotter, and then you can zoom in another 20 power on your phone.
Yep.
We could see every detail. And so they all came over. I zoomed out. They immediately knew where to look with their binos at that point. Yeah. So I let that do the glassing for me, too.
Yeah,
because you know how it goes. You're sitting there with your binos on your eyes all day long. Eventually, you get that eye fatigue. Mm-hmm. You start getting a mild headache. Now you just put it on your phone in front of you and sit back.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Great point. That's a great gift. I'm gonna lead off with one this time, and it is. It's like I don't even want to say it because it just is like. You spoiled private land hunter type product. But at the same time, it has a ton of benefits out west in public, but it's not cheap, okay? And it is an e-bike, right?
Yeah.
I wish I could give everybody an e-bike for multiple reasons. The most important is obviously access, right?
Yep.
And even in the Iowa private land whitetail spots that I hunt, access is still important. Access routes are still important. Being able to go through a property, whether the deer have the advantage and they see you, right? And I talk about this in a previous Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, and that is, I could walk through this gate opening, and the deer would see me, and they'd run away. They get spooked.
Yep.
But I could drive my truck. Or I could drive this e-bike in there, and they would just straight up look at me. And then they would either bed. I mean, this year I drove by a bedded buck, who was probably 70 yards from me. No joke, 70 yards. Shooter buck. And I ended up putting a stock on him, but I forgot where he was. So I took my e-bike back through again, turned around, drove back again. All he did was watch me. If I was walking, he would have been gone.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so
there's something about that like longer profile.
Yep.
I don't know if it confuses them into thinking you're some type of animal, but you know, like every animal in North America is longer than it is tall.
Right.
And so like you see that and they probably just think it's something on four legs.
Exactly.
Running.
Whatever it is, they don't think it's a threat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And same with like a truck, right? So you go in, you bump them. They're still going to run away if you get like really close to them. But it's what I call a soft bump. And they'll eventually work back in the area, or maybe they'll go 100 yards and chill out and calm down. You walk up to them and they see you, then they're toast. And you probably won't see them again that night. So e-bike. And then for like even Western hunting, right? And I hate to be that guy who is like, hey, make sure you use loopholes, you know, use some loopholes. There are pieces of public property in states that do not allow e-bikes on public land. However, they're still very gray. They're not black and white. And one of the loopholes that I use in a couple states is the fact that if it, like they say a motorized vehicle is this much wattage, if it's electric, this much wattage. And if it has a throttle, like it's considered a motorized vehicle. Well, I disconnect the throttle and my wattage is below a certain point. Therefore,
so then you pedal.
Yep. And so the engagement comes from pedaling that connects the motor. That's considered a bicycle. Still a motor on it, but the lack of power and the disconnected throttle means that it is. So if you're bigger, if you're older, it still allows you a lot of access. If the terrain is kind of aggressive, the downfall is if you're backcountry hunting, then that e-bike has, you know, 3 days of battery life, 4 days of battery life, depending on how much you use it, what speed or what power. Because if you use it on full power, then it's going to go faster than if the more actual pedaling you do and you generate the power, then the battery will last longer because it assists you less. But outside of that, you know, a four-wheeler, no four-wheeler, you know, no side-by-sides, no four-wheelers past this point. Well, I don't have a four-wheeler. I have a bicycle. And so maybe that's kind of a loophole, shitty thing to do, but it's not a law. It's nothing that says e-bikes are forbidden beyond this point. You know what I mean? And so
I feel like eventually, I mean, especially with Western states, we see them lead with a lot of the bans that happen.
Yeah.
Right. Like trail cameras and, you know, I feel like eventually you're going to see that, like no electronic bikes.
Yeah.
You're going to see that pop up all over the place.
Yeah. It'll come.
But my question is, what bike do you have? Do you have a soft tail? Like, do you have front and rear suspension on yours?
I have front suspension. I do not have rear suspension. I have a Quiet Cat. It does get a little bit bumpy at times, but I have the ability to adjust the suspension and how rigid it is on the front by a little knob.
Okay.
Yep.
So my wife got a partnership with an e-bike company, and it's more of like a luxury or like beach cruiser casual stuff. Definitely not meant for off-road. I took that out west two seasons ago.
Did you destroy it?
Dude, I took it down one trail, like one ridge line, and I probably made it 300 yards. I'm like, I'm going to die on this thing. It was so not, I mean, it wasn't even a bad trail either. Yeah. And like you could do most things on this trail, and it beat the crap out of me. My back was sore most of the week after that. My neck was sore, my arms were just numb. Like, you know, when you ride on a snowmobile or a dirt bike or something for a long time and your hands just, I mean, you don't have feeling in them.
Yeah.
It felt like that. And I was like, dude, I'm not doing this until I get a soft tail.
Yeah. No, this is, these are built to be abused. The one that I have.
Good.
And so, it's awesome because previous years without one, you know, you're walking 3 miles in. By the time, and this may make me sound like a pussy or, you know, oh shit, 3 miles, that's it, to some guy who lives out west. But I live at like 300 feet elevation or something, like 1,300 feet elevation, okay?
Yeah.
And then I go to someplace, even 5,000 feet. When I go to Colorado, I'm at 10 to 11,000 feet. And so, yeah, it's nice to have a little bit of help climbing those hills and mountains and things like that. So it's definitely a benefit, something to think about. But I really enjoy it, and I enjoy using it here at home, like driving it around town and going on a nice little Sunday cruise with it.
Yeah, I've thought about it. I'm like, man, if I had a good one, or even some of the dirt bike companies are coming out with e-dirt bikes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen those.
Yep.
But I'm like, dude, if you had that, even we've got one of those stupid little baby carrier, like tow behind trailer for the kids.
Yep.
And they're too big for it now. But I'm like, that'd be a perfect gear cart if I could like soup that up a little bit, make it a little bit more rugged.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Then I would buy two extra batteries for the e-bike. I would just leave them in there. Now you can get out there and get back and have you know, more battery to do whatever.
Yep.
On one charge, I think our bikes are at like, I can't remember if it's 40 miles. I think it's around 40 miles on one charge.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, you've got basically a whole week of hunting on this e-bike. If you just bring two batteries with, I can throw my pack in there. I can throw all my stuff. And so it's only a matter of time before the technology is just, it makes it so easy for guys to get back there.
Yep.
But even then, there's a lot of Midwest hunters that I know that wouldn't be able to ride a bike that far, you know.
Yep. Absolutely.
For those guys, just get them a gym membership for Christmas instead of an e-bike.
There you go. That's tough love right there. That's tough love.
Yeah.
We got time for one more, and then we're going to shut her down. Do you have one more product that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I would say a weapon. I mean, and the reason I say weapon is because people feel more confident, they hunt better when they have the right equipment.
Right.
And if you're planning on, you know, going to an open state that you can rifle hunt with your 30-30 lever action, you're probably not going to be very successful, you know, during rifle season.
Yep.
You need the equipment that's right for the job. For me, I would go with the Browning rifle. I absolutely love Browning rifles. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with them a couple of years ago. I shot one. I was like, man, this thing's smooth. Ended up buying another and then another. And so if you're going out west, I mean, any 300 caliber rifle can kill everything in North America that you want it to. A 300, a 300 PRC, a 300 short mag, a 30-06, 308, or a bow, you know. Bows are another big deal. I didn't put a whole lot of thought process into like how good of a bow you have to have until I watched a couple YouTube videos the other day, and this kid, he had like three different bows, and he's like, let's see how much better they actually shoot for the price.
Oh yeah.
And holy cow. I've been under the impression for a long time that most people can't outshoot a cheap bow.
Mm-hmm.
No more. I'm like, dude, seeing the grouping, I mean, at 30 yards, a 6-inch group versus a 2-inch group, like that's the difference between wounding an animal and recovering an animal.
So you're saying that price reflects quality?
100%. I think so.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't done all of these tests, but watching other people do them, I really do think you have to, especially with whatever is coming in contact with the animal or whatever equipment you're using to kill the animal, you need to spend the most on.
Yeah.
And I had an old boss, actually, big time hunter. And he said, whatever you do, never skimp out on your ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what? Like, I buy, you know, Winchester Federal, whatever they have available at Walmart, the whitetail, it's got the deer on it running and like the expansion. And he goes, think about it, man. The only thing that actually makes contact with that animal is the bullet.
Yeah.
Why would you spend $1,200 on a rifle, $1,500 on a scope, $200 on rings, a bipod, a sling, and then you get the cheapest Walmart ammo you can?
Yeah.
I was like, dude, I never really thought about that.
Yeah.
Ever since then, I did my research on all my rifles, found what ammo each one of them likes, and I just, no matter what the cost, that's what I'm shooting because I know it's going to be effective. So
yeah, that makes great. That makes great sense. And rifles are one of those things, guns, I mean, not necessarily bows, but firearms are those things where if you take care of it, you're passing it down to your children or your grandchildren at some point.
Yep.
Right. And so, man, for my dad, has a single shot 22 rifle. Basically, it's like a little revolving door up top that you drop the bullet in and then you rotate it back shut.
Oh my gosh.
You cock it and it's got a hammer on the back, and then you pull the trigger and then you rotate it out and you shake. You have to rotate the gun upside down to shake the bullet out, the casing out. And then you go and you put it back in again. And so we have fun whenever we go out there and mess around with it. But yeah, I mean, if you take care of them, they'll last forever and you'll be able to pass them down to loved ones or sell them or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, if you take care of them, they don't lose value either.
Yeah.
You know, like they will initially a little bit, but at the end of the day, you can have a 15-year-old gun and it's still worth 70% of what it was when you bought it, if you take care of it.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I've always, I did that for my kids actually early on until my son was about 4. I had bought him a gun every year for his birthday and for Christmas because I was like, he's going to walk out of the house with every gun he needs. Mm-hmm. He's going to have an awesome collection. Well, then we couldn't even pay our bills, and I ended up having to start selling his guns off in order to pay our bills because we lived in Colorado where the prices are ridiculous. And so now that we're back in Missouri, I'm going to start doing that. But, like, having that stuff, I wish I had, you know, a 10-15 gun collection that was a hand-me-down set from my grandpa or his dad or whoever. Yeah. And so that's something that I definitely want to leave my kids, but also – get them a BB gun to start, then a 22, then a 410, then, you know, a 223, then, and just work your way up and help them learn the sport.
Yeah. I know if you listen to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, or even a little bit here on this podcast, I voiced my opinion about crossbows, right?
Yeah.
But I will say that I feel a crossbow would be an excellent gift for a kid, because it can, if you take care of it, be passed down to other kids and things like that. And they can use it while they're growing up. It will allow them to feel more comfortable getting into any type of hunting situation. And maybe they'll get excited about transitioning into a bow or, I mean, shit, in certain, you know, whatever state you're in, you know, a crossbow could be one of those things that you just keep and hunt with for several years.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not a huge crossbow fan. I get their application, but now with like the air bows coming out, those things, I'm like, at what point do we just say this isn't archery anymore? Just because it's shooting a bolt instead of a bullet. Like, or I mean, even the air guns, people shooting 50 caliber BB guns essentially that are taking down wildebeest in Africa. I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah.
It's just all loopholes around the alternative method or the primitive season.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man, when you can shoot a deer with a air bow at 150 yards, I'm kind of thinking, okay, is this really what they have this season for? Right. You know?
Right.
But
and man,
don't get me wrong, they're fun.
Yeah.
I would love, you know, I love shooting everything. I'd shoot a deer with my slingshot if I knew it would kill it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I have fun with that stuff. But as far as like the spirit of the rule, I'm like, or it's the same
it's
thing
getting
with
blurry.
Guys using, they're using AR-15 pistols during alternative firearm season.
Yeah.
Because it's technically a pistol. And I'm like, dude, you can kill a deer at 300 yards with your AR-10, you know, chambered in 6.5, but it's just short, so now you can use it for an extended season.
That's a discussion for another time. I mean, the lines are obviously getting blurred with all that stuff, but man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and chat with me about this. And maybe we give some ideas to some guys who are looking for, you know, products that they want to give to their wife, you know, or, you know, hey, I'm interested in this, or maybe a hunting buddy or your brother or father or old, you know, old enough son or daughter, whatever that case may be. So, man, and good luck the rest of the season, man. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to get out there and try to kill something, and hopefully I at least see a mature buck in Missouri before the end of the season. That's like the first step, and then to try to shoot one.
See
so
one
thanks
first.
For having me.
See one first, then shoot it.
Yep, that's right.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Most meal delivery services promise healthy food, but look closer and you'll often find cheap industrial seed oils hiding in the ingredients. Forkful does things differently. Forkful delivers chef-prepared meals made with premium ingredients you'd expect at a great restaurant, from center-cut filet mignon to wild-caught lobster mac and cheese. And every meal is 100% seed oil-free. Instead of canola or soybean oil, Forkful chefs cook with extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and grass-fed butter, because better fats make better food. Meals arrive fresh, never frozen, with clear nutrition and ingredient transparency, so you always know exactly what you're eating. Restaurant-quality meals, real ingredients, no seed oils. Discover Forkful today at ForkfulMeals.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.